Cast the Neil Haley Show and celebrity interviews live from the Grotto with Greg Hanna. Greg, what's going on, man? How are you?
I'm doing amazing. Amazing week. Amazing guests. All excited, Neil.
Oh, it's an exciting way to start May with Linda McMahon. I don't need to really give an introduction. I think everyone knows this household name, but she again was in Trump's administration, also former president of WWE or CEO of WWE, everything. Linda, thanks for stopping by. And it's been a whirlwind, isn't it? Hasn't it? It just continues to just go and with the whole ride to get Trump reelected. It's been a busy time for you, hasn't it?
It really is a busy time. And I've been busy and I hope to stay busy. Being busy is a good thing. I like it.
See, that's what America needs. America needs to see that busyness is a good thing. And to have a purpose and a mission for your life is important. And if they don't have it, Linda, they can't go anywhere in life, right?
Oh, that's absolutely true. One of my favorite quotes is if you want to get something done, give it to a busy woman to do it. And Lucille Ball is it's attributed to her, but it's also attributed to a couple of other people. But I like the attribution to her.
Oh, that's amazing. I love Lucille. That was one of my favorite shows to watch as a kid.
Absolutely. So,
Linda, what made you want to be a politician?
I never thought about being in politics. I had a great career at WWE. And then there just, you know, came a time, it was like 2009, and Chris Dodd was the senator in the state of Connecticut, and he wasn't all that popular at the time. He had left the state, moved his family out, and he seemed to have more emphasis on running for president. And I really felt that I'd had a wonderful career, and it was time to give back. I'd actually started, to digress for a second, I'd started the year before on the State Board of Education. The governor appointed me to that position to fulfill the term of someone who had left, and my interest in education, she knew about, you know, very well. And so that was kind of my first foray into politics a little bit. And then when Chris Dodd's numbers weren't all that great, I said, you know what? I said, we have the kind of, you know, constitution that allows for its citizens to, if they meet certain criteria, to run. And I decided to run for the U.S. Senate right out of the box, not quite as bold as Donald Trump, who ran for president right out of the box. I did run for the U.S. Senate. And I just wanted to, you know, I thought that it was a time that we really should have more business people in Washington. We have plenty of lawyers, but I just thought it was time to have, you know, more business people. And I thought that my experience could lend itself well in Washington, and I could give back to the community and give back to my state and to my country.
Fantastic.
And I think it's so important to look at specifically people that are politicians, that they've had to run something once in their lives, right? Because there's so many decisions that a politician has to make that you had to make in the WWE with a global organization that you're with, and all the different logistics and everything that a CEO has to do. That is really equates to what a politician has to do in so many ways.
Well, in so many ways, especially, I think especially if you're a cabinet head, and I was, you know, incredibly grateful and honored that President Trump asked me to head the Small Business Administration. And it was interesting when he gave me a call and he said, when he was the president-elect, he called, he said, can you come down and meet me at Trump Tower? I want to talk to you about something. Now, I'd known President Trump at that time for about 25, 27 years. We had done some business together before. And when I came down, he said, I have a novel idea. And I said, what's that? He said, I want somebody to head up the Small Business Administration that's actually run a business and started it and knows what it's about and can appreciate small businesses on the ground. And he said, I'd like for you to consider doing that. And it probably took about a nanosecond to say yes. Because I was incredibly flattered, and I said, and honored, you know, to be asked to serve in the cabinet. And I think it's one of the, you know, one of the best things I've done. And I really enjoyed being there and doing that.
Well, you know, Linda, I would love your thoughts, given what you just mentioned about the Small Business Administration, on Biden's anti-worker economy and the effect that it's having on small businesses.
Well, I can tell you that, you know, it sort of goes into his whole Bidenomics, which he doesn't even use that word anymore because he knows what a failure it's been. But he really has no appreciation, I don't think, for small businesses and the American worker. Small businesses need less taxes, not more taxes. They need fewer regulations, not more regulations. They need greater access to capital, not high interest rates that are preventing them from getting that access to capital. And even from the NFIB, the National Federation of Independent Businesses, small business optimism is declining. They don't know where they're going to be. The worst thing in the world for businesses, not knowing what's coming down the pike. So President Biden has already said that he's going to allow the Trump tax cuts to expire, and he's actually also going to increase taxes. So small businesses don't know where they're going to be, and that's really tough. And the other thing that that we did, I thought, really well under the Trump administration was the workforce initiative that we had. Companies all over the country came to Washington. We convened them. We talked about apprentice programs, and they were really unbelievably pleased to be included, these businesses, to be included in this whole program and how to really grow their apprenticeship program. And they each pledged a certain amount of new jobs or new people into the workforce that they would create. They actually signed a pledge. Governors, heads of businesses signed these pledges, you know, all over the country. And I think in the five-year period, we were scheduled to introduce about 16 million more workers into the marketplace. So President Biden didn't continue with that program. And not only that, he adjusted, or if you will, tweaked the apprenticeship program. We had 800 pages of new rules. And what this apprenticeship program did was, instead of allowing a company to train apprentices at the rate in which they needed them and the rate at which the apprentices could actually take on that responsibility, put in these regulations that there must be 2,000 hours of apprentice work, 144 hours of like in classroom work. And these companies that brought on these apprentices had to treat the apprentices like employees, pay them benefits, pay them the same salary as those people who are already skilled in their job. So it's just a killer for the apprenticeship programs, just an absolute killer. Mm. And those are the things that I just think the Biden administration just doesn't understand, you know, about the workforce and about what companies need. The whole thing about apprentice programs should be to grow the skill level or reskill workers for the jobs that their employer needs. And boy, he just kind of shot that in the foot.
You know, being, you know, being the administrator for the Small Business Association, you look at all that, you look at small businesses in general. What did you learn most being in the Trump administration about small businesses that you didn't know before?
Well, having built a business myself from the ground up, I think I had a great appreciation for what a lot of these small businesses were going through. What I counseled them on when I would actually talk to entrepreneurs. And let me just back up for a second. While I was at SBA, I went to every district office around the country. There's 68 of them in all 50 states. No other administrator has ever done that. And I visited not only the SBA office, but then I went out into the community and toured small businesses, talked to them about the tax cuts, regulatory reform, and met with a lot of entrepreneurs and a lot of young business people just starting out. And the one thing, the one bit of advice they would ask me, you know, if you had one bit of advice for me as I'm starting up my new business, what would it be? And I said, do not be undercapitalized. Mm-hmm. I said, that is the thing that kills so many small businesses. You have a great idea, you get started, and suddenly you're using your credit cards, you're borrowing from Uncle Paul, and you're doing all of these other things that you need to do just to stay afloat. You're not going to grow. You're not going to be able to be innovative. So don't go in undercapitalized and have a business plan. Know exactly where you're going, what you need to do. And I said, and I can tell you that from the standpoint that I once went bankrupt. I know what it's like to lose everything and then have to come back from that. I said, so let me counsel you not to be undercapitalized. And so I learned a lot of businesses really didn't have that. They could start, but they didn't have that next bit of capital, you know, to grow.
Mm-hmm. That's a really great point. You know, I started my business when I was 22 and I had no capitalization, and I did go to my Uncle Paul and he said no, but I made it happen anyway.
Well, it still happen. And clearly that many, there are probably more success stories just from grit and cutting corners and doing all those things. Yep. But you might have been able to grow a little bit faster if you'd had a little bit more capital. But that, I think that that is that is still the advice that I give, to try not to be undercapitalized. Of course, if you don't have a good business plan when you start, you really don't know you're going to be undercapitalized.
No, that's right. No, I 100% agree with you. You know, I wish I had thought about taking that out, but I almost put it on myself as almost like a challenge. You know, you're going to make this happen from zero with like no lines of credit and no loans and no this and no that. And I did, but it was slow. Yeah.
Yep. And that's, you hear so many of those stories, and that's the American dream.
Cash flow is king. I find that out. They don't teach that in school, especially if you didn't go for business. Like, how many people that are entrepreneurs in business never went for business at all, you know, in school, you know what I mean? And they don't tell you, by the way, when you start growing, you start making money, you might run out of money still. They don't get that. So I think that's what the Biden administration is not seeing, is that we need cash flow. We need more loans. We don't want to continue to be living off of our profits to put back into our business. I see this. I do this all the time. It stinks. And I wish I could go out and get the right loans. But the way that the rates are, the way it looks, it's not even worth it. And it's a shame.
No, you're right. And that's one thing. One of the things that's happening now is this credit crunch with the high interest rates. We're seeing, you know, slowing in the housing markets. We're seeing slowing, mm-hmm. you know, across the board with these high interest rates. And it just is, it really stifles business growth.
Yeah. No, you know, I was so fortunate. You know, I bought my car and house 2019 under President Trump, 3.1%, you know, 30-year fixed. Amazing. It's like 6-something now. I was looking at a line of credit to expand some things we're working on at the company. Traditional loans, conventional, they want almost 12%. SBA was a little better at 9.25% minus my quarter point for being a veteran. So 9%, not bad. A lot better, more favorable than the bank directly, but 100% with what you're saying. And boy, the hundreds of thousands of dollars we have to send to the IRS, I think of all the guys I could hire and the gals and give them a shot. You know, it's very frustrating.
Yeah. And the other thing I think that President Biden is overlooking is the expiration of these tax cuts that were under Trump. One especially that has actually already started expiring in 23, I think finishes up in 24. And that is the being able to write off the capital investment for that small business owner in the year in which it was made, write it fully off that year. And there was a baker just outside Boston, and I toured his plant, and he had these big commercial ovens. He told me, he said, you know, this tax cut is going to allow me to buy a new oven that is $1 million. This oven's $1 million. But I already have business lined up that I can plug in and I can grow. And I already have the space allocated in my plant for this, but I would have to wait a couple of years, but I can do it this year because of the tax write-off.
Fantastic.
And so not only did that get his business, you know, did grow quicker, but look at what it did for the economy. He hired more people. He had more revenue coming in, and therefore he was paying more taxes. You know, when you make more revenue, you pay more taxes. And it's just lost on this administration that taxing and regulation kills business. It's just unbelievable.
And the other thing that's really hard during this Bionomics situation is the workers that don't want to work anymore. You know, at the restaurants, you know, they can't find bus people. They can't find waiters and staff and so on, because people wanted to stay home and get their $2,000 or $3,000 a month and not work.
When you're being paid to stay home, it's a pretty good incentive to stay home. And then what's happened to fill a bit of this void is, unfortunately, we have so many of the illegal aliens who've come across the border who are now filling a lot of these jobs at lower prices. So that for those who do want to work is helping to, you know, reduce the workforce as well. And so it's just poor business, quite frankly. It's just poor business.
And that's the problem. And then in part of your process, what you're doing now to help President Trump be reelected is multiple things. We're not just small business. You're involved in a lot of other topics. Why to reelect President Trump, right? You're on the ground in more ways than just small business now, especially with your experience you got to try to reelect President Trump in 2020.
Well, I'm now the chair of the America First Policy Institute. Now that is a 501c3, so that's not campaign. So I'm not working, you know, with President Trump as part of his campaign. But what the America First Policy Institute is doing is we are helping to continue a lot of the policies that he had when he was in office, like lower taxes, like regulatory reform, strong international policy, and, you know, good healthcare policy, just great energy policies. I mean, let's drill, baby, drill. Let's make sure that we utilize the resources that we have here in our country. So at America First Policy Institute, we absolutely are developing and writing the policies that will continue for the next administration, not only on the federal level, but on the state and local level, trying to get making sure that the messaging is correct and making sure that we are doing all the research that we need to do. You know, we're doing all the typical stuff that a think tank must do, but we are clearly a do tank. And we are on the ground for the next election, for election integrity, making sure that poll watchers are trained and making sure that the laws of those states that got changed under COVID go back to where they were, and filing suits in places where we need to stop illegal aliens from registering to vote. I mean, the Biden administration actually has ordered that the federal agencies act as voter registration agencies. And the people that are registering, they don't have to prove that they're citizens. It's the most amazing thing you've ever seen. I mean, it's just constitutionally wrong. Mm-hmm. And so to make sure that we are on the ground and watching all of these things to ensure our election integrity so that we can make it easier to vote but hard to cheat.
Yeah. Do you think with all the scrutiny that's been going on since 2020 and so on, do you think that there's even a chance that they could do whatever they did in 2020 to make this happen again in 2024?
I think they're definitely going to try. And the mechanics on the ground are what are so important. In early voting, AFPI is a strong proponent of early voting, of ballot harvesting, where it is proper to do that. Republicans can't sit back and say, no, we're going to vote just on election day. We can't do that anymore. So as soon as the states have the ability or they've changed their own laws to say, okay, early voting starts now. And in some states, it starts as early as September. Wow. So, you really have to have your game face on and have all the training done and everything before September and to make sure that people the voter registration rolls are cleaned from the Secretary of State's office in all these states so that dead people can't vote. And we have found that they have. I mean, there's just a lot of cleaning up to do. And so that's one of the ways that AFPI is focusing. It's a voter integrity mission, if you will.
Yeah. You know, last time around, not only was there vote early, there was vote often.
Well, we don't want that.
Nope.
are you surprised by so many people turning to being now supporting President Trump that did not support him in 2020 because of what's, we see some of the chaos that's going on in our country, but are you surprised some of the people that you might never have thought that would turn to support President Trump that are now?
Well, I've been pleased by it because, you know, at this particular point, we have something that we've not really had before. We actually have the records of two presidents, President Trump for his 4 years, and we've got President Biden for almost his 4 years. And you can compare them side by side. Where was the economy under Trump versus where is it under President Biden? Where was the security of our borders? Where was security not only nationally, but abroad? Where was the economy? You know, we can look at President Biden's economy. I mean, gas prices are up over 53%. Mm-hmm. Groceries, eggs up over 20-some%. It's just amazing to see the increase in prices. And a family today has to have $11,400 more just to have the same standard of living they had when President Biden took office. So it's easy to compare these records. And I think common sense people are looking at the records of these two presidents and saying, my goodness, you know, where do we want to put our money? Who are we going to bet on? And that's why I think you're seeing, in spite of everything that President Trump is going through with all of these, you know, bogus cases that he has to sit through trial on, you're seeing his numbers hold and go up because the country knows who would be the better leader.
Well, what are like three things that you feel like an entrepreneur, or the average person could do, you know, to carry this message and into the election and to try to make things better for the American worker and for their small business?
You know, one thing is that I always really ask our voters, be informed, do your research, understand what policies these candidates are putting forward. Because if you just are just listening to mainstream media or and not really doing your own diligence and research, you're just really not going to know what these candidates stand for and what they're going to be doing. And I really stress that. And in your own community, go out and work in your own community. Make sure your neighbors are voting. Tell them, you know, when does early voting start? It starts now. Get these people to the polls. Let's not to the polls, but let's make it's early voting is by mail. So mostly by mail. And make sure that that it's being done, you know, correctly and properly. And let's make sure that we're registering new voters. We have a lot of people that are moving in and out of states. We have young people who are becoming of age to vote. Let's make sure they're informed. All of these things are so, so important.
Very good. Now, Greg, you have your question. You ask all our celebrity guests. Go with that question.
I do. But right before I do that, one more quick one. What are your thoughts on, you know, revaluing the currency in the U.S. and other parts of the world, having some type of a reset, you know, eliminating some debt, everybody getting back on a gold standard, who isn't now at this point, or some kind of asset back, you know, getting rid of the fiat dollar, that whole scenario. Do you have any thoughts around that at all?
Yeah, I'm going to leave that to the economist to figure
out. Okay. Fantastic. Okay, great. So here's my last question. It's been a real pleasure speaking with you, Linda. I appreciate the time. It's phenomenal. Tell me, what's the most important thing in life you feel you've ever learned?
The most important thing in life I've ever learned. I think it's really, it's not how many times you get knocked down. It's how you get back up. And I just think that's so important. You know, expect in life to get knocked down. And if you go through the school of hard knocks, you learn an awful lot each and every time. But it's just so important how you get back up with new knowledge, with new vigor, with new determination. And so don't let getting knocked down bother you. Just jump back up and go for it again.
And Linda, I know that's fantastic. And Linda, I know that you're not just involved in the nonprofit. You're doing some speaking too for women, right? All over the country, right? You're doing a lot of that too.
Yeah, I am. I really enjoy going around to different parts of the country, talking about women's empowerment issues. As a matter of fact, this past weekend, I was out in Seattle, Washington for the Global Beauty Awards, which is the pageant industry. And it's really, the pageant industry is so much more than what you would just look at on the surface. And it really is empowering women and training women to how to present themselves and how to negotiate and how to have their own self-confidence. And so I was very pleased to be out there to speak on women empowerment. And so that was kind of a different thing, you know, that I do, but I am doing lots of podcasts like I am doing this today. A lot of Zoom calls, a lot of interviews about the economy, about small businesses, about what we're doing at AFPI. And so doing those all around the country as well to inform people. We're a great resource. Go to AmericaFirstPolicy.com and look at all of the centers that we are dealing with, from energy to American prosperity to the American worker. There are 22 centers, and we have 9 former cabinet members that are chairing those centers, and then we have some of the top minds in the country, helping to continue to write this policy. So it's all of the above and what we're doing to make sure that our country is growing, that we have businesses that can be innovative, that our economy is on the right track, and that we have safety here and abroad.
It's fantastic. Last thing I wanted to tell you, Linda, is I'm making a comeback into professional wrestling. I wrestled back in the 90s in the minor leagues for Burt Prentice, for Jerry Lawler, and all these different people. I'm a legitimate 6'10", and I'm making I'm making a comeback into professional wrestling to just cut the unfinished business, getting a documentary done and all that stuff. So I just want to let you know that because so I ran into a lot of the guys that end up working for WWE after when they were over with Burt and Lawler and USWA and all that stuff. So I just wanted to kind of say, wow, you know, it's such an amazing thing that you were able to do with the WWE. And I see wrestling as life in so many ways. If you can learn the wrestling business, you can learn life in so many ways.
Well, good luck to you. I wish you the best of luck.
All right. Thanks, Linda. Appreciate you stopping by.
Thank you.
Thanks, Linda.
All right. Thanks, Linda. That was a special simulcast of the Neil Haley Show and Celebrity Interviews live from the Grotto. Greg Hanna. You guys take care.